long time ago, wasn't it? Oh, my goodness. It was warm there. We were out there in a room with other ministers that were all Reformed pastors. There were two Arminians there, Dr. Gray and me. We were like holding out our little bics. Go light your candle. Thank you for letting me be part of the Asbury tradition. This is a rich tradition. I understand, I mean, I don't read everything every week, but I understand you've got a record freshman class. Is that right? All right, let's get it. If you're a freshman, just like give it up right now. Yeah, all right. Ah, that's good, good, good. And I know what all of you upperclassmen are thinking. So if you're an upperclassman, just say, so what? Oh, man, that was deafening. Okay. You guys are part of a rich tradition here. And this week is really an installment in that tradition. It's a time where this school focuses on what it means to be holy. Sometimes holiness has a bad reputation. We think of it as pious living, as doing a whole bunch of things that you don't like to do and getting forbidden things you do like to do. But that's not really what holiness is. What holiness is, what hagiazos means, is whole. It means complete. It means healthy. What that means is we were all born into this world sick or in some way deformed. It doesn't matter what our parents told us, that's the truth of it. And when a person's holy, they become what they were designed to be. So if you can go back to your early teens or something and you can think about those things that maybe you got into that you couldn't get out of and you said to yourself, man, I wish I could bust loose from that. Or maybe you find yourself somewhere in a car as I did, 16, 17 years old, saying, you know, I think I'm supposed to be something different, something more in life, but I don't know what it is. Think of holiness as what it is when you don't know what to call it. I thought God wanted me to grow up to be something special. But that urge to be something more, something special, was nothing more than the urge to be holy. Because the word means extraordinary in a world that is just ordinary. So we'll spend a few days talking about that here, and then a friend of mine, member of my church, Dave Ward, will come in and finish the week, and by the time we're done, I hope we have a good picture, at least maybe a little better picture, of what it means to be holy and how truly relevant that message is. The theme that you've selected this week is called Liberation of Heart, Soul, and Mind. Julius Lester has written a book, a children's book, actually some years ago. My wife's a teacher. She brought it home from school. I sat down one night on the couch and started reading it. The book's called To Be a Slave. Opening pages, it says, to be a slave is to be owned by another person as a car, a house, or a table is owned. It's to live as a piece of property that could be sold, a child from its mother, a wife from her husband. To be a slave is to be not human, a thing that plows fields, cuts wood, cooks food, nurses another person's child, a thing whose sole function is determined by the one who owns you. To be a slave is to know inside that you are human, more human than the one who said you were not human. It's to know joy and laughter and sorrow and tears, and yet all the while to be considered the equal of a table. If you can stomach the rest of the book, it's a collection of letters and stories that come from slaves in the South in the 1800s, the cruelest form of slavery. They tell story after story of women who give up 7 children. The moment they have them, the master takes them and sells them at the auction. By the time they get to the 4th or 5th one, the mother decides, I will not let my child be born a slave, and she kills her own child. So if you can stomach it, I say. Well, there's one story towards the end of this book that grabbed my attention. It was a story of the day when the slaves heard that they were free. They were standing in the field, one of them said. She said, we was out there in the field, we had the hoe in our hand, and all of a sudden, a woman come running across the field, and she shouts out, you free, you free. Nobody moved. Finally, we said, what are you talking about? And she said, Master Lincoln has just set you free. You don't have to work here no more. She said, I had a hoe in my hand, and I turned, and the missus, that's the owner of the plantation's wife, was standing in the field not far away from me, and I looked at her dead in the eye, and I said, we are free. We don't have to serve you no more. And she said, she picked up her apron, she put it over her face and began to cry and sob. And I threw the hoe in the air. And I ran out of that field and I never came back. And the date on the letter was 1881. If you know your American history, you know the Emancipation Proclamation was signed in 1862. You know that Lee surrendered the South in 1865. So somewhere between 16 and 19 years after they had been pronounced free, the slaves were still living as slaves. And do you know why? There were two reasons. One was that their masters never told them, and most of them were kept illiterate so that they would never find out. They were being held against their wishes because they didn't know the truth. But the other reason is even worse. It's because when they found out, some of them wouldn't leave. They said, the life that we have, as hard as it is at least predictable. If you're good, he will take care of you. And so they literally chose to stay in slavery. One even wrote and said, I want to go back. I want to see my master again. And I want to have him tell me what I'm supposed to do. And when I don't do it right, I want him to look me in the eye and say, oh, Charlie, this is a horrible job. You're not much of a man, but it's the best you can do. Go get yourself a piece of brown sugar, Charlie. But it was the only kind of life he knew. And all of this has me wondering, what is the worst predicament? Is it worse to be a slave and all the while want to be free, or is it worse to really be free and all the while still think you're a slave? What I'll be saying in the next couple of days is that there are a couple kinds of slavery. You'll hear that probably again and again. This is the land of the free. We are the Americans. Ours is the Statue of Liberty, the four freedoms, the three of the Renaissance, and the four of Norman Rockwell paintings. Ours is the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights. We don't take well to people telling us that we're slaves, but I think it's because we have so narrowly defined slavery, we have defined ourselves out of it. Does that make sense? We think we know what it means to be a slave, and because we are not that, we say to ourselves, well, I'm free. Well, what do you mean? Well, I can do anything I want. Nobody can tell me what to do. But maybe there are other things to serve besides masters. Maybe there are other forms of oppression besides chains in someone else's field. Maybe you can still do anything you want to do and find yourself in a whole bunch of stuff that you don't like because you're caught in it. Or maybe you can be so entrapped by a system and you don't want to disappoint anybody and you want to keep the performance up and you want people to think that you are who you think they think you are. Does that make sense? Have I already lost you? I mean, this is an academic university. You guys are overachievers. You go out and get degrees. And if you don't make the grade, they can't keep you. And you know that. That's the way it's got to be. But before you know it, you get to be about 30, 40 years old, and you realize, dang, I'm trapped. There are standards, man, and I can't keep them anymore. And I'm not just speaking about students right now. I'm speaking about faculty, too. Who cares if you made the grade? If the grade is still what defines you. So you say to yourself, I don't even know what it would be like to bust loose. So I just stay here and do the best I can. Let me tell you a story, can I? Oh, thank you. Because I got nothing else to say if I don't. You've heard this story before. I want you to pretend you didn't. I want you for a moment to take in your mind and say everything that you've learned of God is maybe let's just put it aside. Like you've been to Sunday school. How many grew up in church? Can you see your hand? You grew up in church with some kind of religious people. You know what I'm trying to say. Take everything they taught you. Take all these ideas that you had of your own about God, who God was, Sunday school class, sermons, stuff that you watched and really, quote, holy people, and set it aside for a moment. Not going to say it's not right. I'm just going to say, could you, for a moment, as much as you can, wipe the slate clean? Let me tell you a story. And here's why. Because God is not who we say he is. God, who is Jesus, says he is. So what if we don't just let Jesus describe God to us? He ought to know. Once upon a time, there was a man, he had two sons, and one son came to him, and he said, Father, give me my share of the inheritance. When he heard it, the father must have known inside, he's done. See, by law, the son had the inheritance coming. He had one-third of it coming. It was owed to the son, but it was not payable until death. And so when a son comes to you as an old man and says, give me my share of the inheritance, what he's really saying to you in Hebrew language is, you're dead to me. You don't matter anymore. You're a provider. You owe it. Give it to me. It's hard at this point not to feel sorry for the father. Because when the son asks for the money, the father knows instinctively what this means. He knows if I keep it from him, he'll stay against his wishes. If I give it to him, he'll leave and I might never see him again. It's just the risk you take when you love somebody. And so he gives the money to the son. The son waits a few days so it looks a little better. And then he gets up and he leaves and he goes off to a faraway country and he starts to party. In the middle of his party, he's running out of money. They fall into an economic recession. Soon, the well runs dry, and he can't find a job. Decides to go out and hire himself out to serve in somebody else's field, serving pigs. Something he never would have done when he was home. But when you're desperate, when you're out of it, you'll do anything. And right here, it's pretty hard not to feel sorry for the father again, because now he's hurt twice. He's hurt once because the son wanted his money and then he left him anyway. And now he's hurt a second time because his own flesh and blood has taken his belongings, squandered them. And it's not the possessions. You sit at home realizing that your son is destitute. Look, I'm a dad. And I cry like twice every 10 years. And both times, it is over the moments when my kids seems like they're losing it. And there's nothing you can do. You're powerless to run in and fix it. Because if you fix it, they just become slaves again. And yet if you leave them on their own to do it their way, it could be worse. And so the son says to himself out in the field, I don't have anything. Even my father's slaves have it better than I do, and so this is what I'll do. He's stuck. He's afraid if he goes back, The father's just going to hang it up in his face again, but he knows if he stays out here, his lifestyle is going to kill him. And so he finds a middle way. He says to himself, here's what I'll do. I'll get something, my dad will get something. I'll go back so my dad gets me, and I'll get to be home, but my dad will not have to call me a son. I'll let him call me a slave. That will be the middle way. I'll get my life back, but I won't get it all back, so dad can keep the code. So he gets up and he goes back. And his father looks off and sees him a long ways off. And when he runs out on the path, dad picks up his robe and he runs. Old men in those days never ran. It was a sign of indignity. An old man never showed you his legs. This old man doesn't care. He just picks up the robe and goes on a mad dash. And when he sees his boy somewhere out on the path, he throws his robe around the boy. The boy starts into his spiel. He says, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against earth, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your slaves. That's odd, isn't it? Father, make me like one of your slaves. Slaves don't have fathers, they have masters. Fathers don't have slaves, they have sons. He can't make up his mind. He's got the speech in his head. He gets ready to say it, and he says, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against earth. And it's as if the father hears it and says, yes, you're right, you have. But he cuts him off. He stops him, and he throws the robe around him, and he says to the other slaves, the real ones, he says, go into the house, get the best robe. That would be the father's robe. Get the signet ring. That's a sign of family ownership. Get the sandals that only the children wear and go fire up the grill. We're going to have the mother of all parties. That's a rough translation. But oddly enough, the father is going to throw the party the son was trying to have on his own. You never find it when you run after it. You find it when you stay home and let the Father love on you. So they fire up the grill. They throw the party. Out in the other side is another boy. The parable could have ended there, and it would have been a perfect sermon. But it's almost as if the parable continues because Jesus is trying to say this whole thing really isn't about the prodigal, it's about the elder. Out in the other field, working with hoe in his hand, is the elder son. He's never left at all. He gets ready to come in for the night, and he hears the singing and the dancing that's going on in the house, and he calls a slave over and says, what's all the racket? Slave says, listen to it. Your brother, and he's thinking to himself, I don't have a brother. He left. Your brother has come home, and your dad is throwing a party. Come on in. And the elder is angry. Finally, dad leaves the house, runs out into the field after the elder as though he were another kind of prodigal. And they have a conversation in the field. And the dad says to the other prodigal, why will you not come in? And he tees off on him. And he says, Dad, listen to the language. He says, he doesn't even call him dad. He says, listen. All of my life, I have been working like a slave. What did he call himself? For you out here in the field. And you have never given me anything. And now this son of yours has just run off and spent the money on prostitutes. Really? Nobody said anything about prostitutes, boy. Is that what you would have done with the money? Nobody said your brother was living on prostitutes. You're saying more about your own condition and your own desires than you are about your brother. And yet the elder brother says, he goes out and squanders the money on prostitutes, and I stay home and I work like a slave in the field, and you never so much as give me a goat for my friends. Now all of a sudden, the elder brother is stuck. Just like the prodigal was stuck. On the one hand, he knows that if he goes into the house and he has a party with the father, all he's doing is condoning the lifestyle he spent his life trying to avoid. And it's going to feel to him like if he just goes in and joins the party, you can just do anything you want to do and just be forgiven, man. It's like there are no rules. Well, listen, if there are no rules, then screw it all. Let's just go over here and do what we want to do. So if I go back, I'm going to endorse that kind of a lifestyle. He can't do that. And yet he knows if he stays out here in the field, he is farther from his father than he's ever been in his life. So the German theologian says he's become a new prodigal, only from this land there is almost no return. And that's where the story ends. You would think there'd be a happy, but there's not. The story ends with two people in the field and a father who somehow cannot reconcile it. The one son feels that he's never good enough to come back, and the other son feels like he's been too good. And he's stuck in his niceness. And so at the end, there are two slaves. Not one, two. There is one over here who has been captive to his passions. And there's one over here who has been hostage to his standards. This one has done anything that he wanted, and so he broke all of the rules, but that one couldn't do anything that he wanted. And so he kept all of the rules. One is a bad slave. One is a good slave. But they are both slaves. What both of them miss is the heart of the Father. If either one knew what the father was really like, they would have never left home in the first place. And they never would have stayed in the field and worked like a slave. This one over here, he thinks that his father loves him because, well, he should. What's not to love? I mean, there is something in everyone that's worth loving. Everyone. And so this slave represents a whole generation of people who have been told from their childhood up that they're special. Their rooms are a shrine to their mediocrity. They have blue ribbons for fourth place. They were in soccer leagues where they didn't keep score because they were afraid of damaging them. Who on earth? People are not all, I mean, if people were created equal, look at sports. And so when they talk about what they're going to do and how special and talented, and well, just a couple years ago, the valedictorian at Harvard University told her class that, quote, all of history was waiting for this generation to arrive. You only have to be older than 30 to laugh at that. Thinking, oh, really? Holy cow. That's Greek for wow. History's long, and when you grow up thinking, yeah, this is it, then it resides in us.
We are loved because of us.
The other side is the person who grew up in church with all sorts of rules. How many of us were there again? I mean, how many were given rules that we were holy before we wanted to be? Because daddy would have killed us, we would have broke our mama's heart. And so we followed the things that the church or the professors or the coach or the older brother, sister, or mom and dad told us that we had to do. But pretty soon, our worth was based on how good of a boy or girl we were. And so when we sing this morning, his love never fails, it never gives up, never runs out on me, that's true. But the song never tells you why. The song never tells you why. His love never fails, it never gives up, not because of what is in you, but because of what is in him. So what that means is you're not special. He is. The worth of everybody is based on what the Father has given them, not on what they have earned or what they have become or how they... None of that stuff. It's not in you. It's in him. But you know what that also means? You can't screw this up. You can't break it. You can't jinx it. You can't make more. You can't save it. You can't hoard it. You just have to take it. The Father loves you for what is in him, not for what is in you. You say, what does this have to do with slavery? It has everything to do with slavery. Because we don't like the other person, we run away from them. We overconvert. What happens is, I'm losing my brains, my mic or something. Let me scrap this. Let me get this one. Are we good now? Perfect. What happens is we grow up over here on this side, right, religious, and we, because we're steeped in a church, and we look at the unrighteous people, we look at the elder, the younger prodigal, and we look at that, and they are the world. W-U-U-U-U-R-L-D. And then what happens is, because they're the world and we don't want to become like them, we stay over here in this self-righteous life, only we don't like it. We get caught with a lot of disciplines and habits that just aren't like us. We get forced to do things and they say, well, you know, keep faking it till you make it, man. Maybe when you're 40 and you're too pooped to party, then you will like the holy life. Only the problem is the holy life is the party. But because we can only stand over here and envy people from the other side, we avoid them. And then what happens is we come to a Christian college and we leave our parents at home and we say, I'm a free. You are not going to do this to me again. And we just pop loose and we do anything that we want to do because now we can decide on our own. We say to our roommates, nobody can tell me what to do. I can do what I want to do now, make my own decisions, watch anything, do anything that I want. You see what we have done? We have simply left one kind of slavery for another. Let me tell you what will happen to you. One day it's going to catch up with you, 30, 40 years old, but the rent's going to come due. The recession's going to hit. You're going to run out of money. You're going to come to your senses. You're going to say in your mid-30s, you know what? I'd go back to that church, but they probably won't have me. So what I'll do is over-convert, and I'll become a legalist. I'll be more strict than any of them. And then you'll be like 55, 60, and you'll say, I don't care what people think of me. All the while, you're missing the Father.
If you do not learn the love of the Father, that the Father loves you for what is in Him, not for what is in you, you will play this game the rest of your life. Here's the point. You never, ever, ever, ever break free by running away from something. You have to run to something. So if you came to college thinking that now you're free because you can do whatever you want and no one can tell you what to do, dude, that just sounds like another way of saying, I'm trying to avoid those people. Or if you're sitting in college saying right now, yeah, I really do like this stuff. I do. Watch my head. Watch my head. You're just trying to avoid them. But until you realize the love of the Father and that His love is in Him and that you aren't special, He is, and that you can't possibly mess this up, you are for the first time in your life free to become what you were designed to be. And that is a beautiful thing. You can sit in a class with a whole bunch of your classmates thinking, man, he's odd, and you won't care. And that is beautiful. You can start a whole new list of disciplines that nobody in your class or dorm would dream of doing. And you can like it, and that's a beautiful thing. You can say, others may, but I cannot. And that's beautiful because it's not imposed. It is embraced because it grows out of the person you are. More than anything, I want you to grasp that kind of love. Because when you do, it changes you. Last story. This book on love, John Ortberg tells of a little girl that grew up with a cleft palate, crooked teeth, disfigured face. And so whenever she went to class, she was ridiculed and mocked. She said she learned to mark herself. Every public gathering she went in, she knew she was different. You could see by looking at her mouth. And when people would ask her, what happened to your mouth? She would say, I fell. I cut myself on a piece of glass. She couldn't say, this is the way I am. They had a teacher in the class that everyone loved. She said she was round and short. And she was the most pleasant person in the room with a big smile. And every year there was a whisper test. She would select one child to come over to the desk. And as she leaned down, the teacher would have the child cover one ear and then with the other ear listen to a message that the teacher would give them. And then the child was to turn and whisper that message to the next child who whispered it to the next child. You get it. Normally what happened is the teacher would say something inane like, the sky is blue. Are those new shoes? But she said she never forgot the seven words that the teacher said to her that set her free when she said, I wish you were my little girl. Now, years later, that little girl with a much, much more whole and healthy view of herself traces her transformation back to the day when the teacher gave her her worth. And that is what I want to have happen to you. I do not want your worth to come from your degrees, although you should get them. Go ahead, finish. I don't want it to come from your parents. I don't want it to come from the dean or from anybody else. I want your worth to come from God in Jesus Christ, because any other form is a form of slavery. It will bite you one day or another. You must break free. And so I want to pray for you. And after I pray, we will be done. Jesus, Jesus, use these words now to liberate people all over this auditorium. Wherever you came from and whatever you've done, even if you're still doing it, I love you and you are mine. Because I am special. Because I am special, you are. You are my beloved. Amen.